At the end of John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, George Milton learns that his intellectually disabled friend Lenny Small has killed the wife of the son of Boss, who runs the farm where they work. Realizing that their dream of owning their own farm is over, George placates Lenny into believing the dream is still alive before putting him down.
George, but tell now how it's going to be.
We're going to get a little place.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to get a little place, and
we're going to
have...
We have a cow, some pigs, and we're going to have maybe a chicken. Down the flat, we'll have a little field.
Feed the alfalfa for the rabbits.
The rabbits.
And I get the tender rabbits.
Of Mice and Men is a brilliant piece of fiction, and that's what it remained in the decades after its publication. But now, it has found itself at the center of a legal dispute over whether inmates with intellectual disability like Rocky Myers can be executed. Some of these inmates have won their claims and been taken off of death row, while others have lost their claims and remained on death row, with some even being executed. Rocky Myers, however, falls into neither of these categories.
Welcome to Undisclosed. This is the fourth and final episode in our series in the Rocky Myers case. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author of Adnan Story, and as always, I'm joined by my colleagues, Susan Simpson and Colin Miller.
Hi, I'm Susan Simpson. I'm an attorney in Washington, D.C. at Clinton & Peed, PLLC, and I blog at The View from LL2.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. Struggling to make sure that 5 more minutes doesn't end up being 5 more hours? Use Circle to set limits and end the screen time debate with your kids once and for all. Circle is the easiest way to manage your family's online time across all their connected devices, both inside and outside your home. With Circle Home Plus and the Circle app, parents can filter what content is allowed, set limits for screen time, and monitor history and usage. You can keep track across each connected device, from laptops, phones, and tablets to smart TVs, streaming devices, and video game consoles, all from one app. Each family member has a profile that's fully customizable to their needs, age, and maturity. You'll never stop worrying about your kids, but with Circle, you'll have one less thing to worry about. And right now, our listeners can get a limited time offer of $30 off of a Circle Home Plus when you visit meetcircle.com/undisclosed and enter undisclosed at checkout. Again, you can get $30 off when you visit meetcircle.com/undisclosed and enter undisclosed at checkout. It's a limited time podcast exclusive offer. Again, that's meetcircle.com/undisclosed and enter undisclosed to save $30.
On January 18, 1994, the jury found Rocky Myers guilty of the murder of Ludie Mae Tucker. As we noted last episode, the jury voted 9-3 in favor of life without parole, but the judge overruled the jury's vote on June 2, 1994, and imposed a death sentence. Rocky then filed a direct appeal based upon errors evident from the trial record. That appeal ended on January 12, 1998, when the U.S. Supreme Court denied his petition for writ of cert. Rocky then brought a petition for post-conviction relief on December 21, 1998, based upon errors that weren't evident from the trial record. As with most of these petitions, Rocky claimed that he received ineffective assistance of counsel based upon errors such as his trial attorney not asking Mamie Dutton about whether she knew Rocky Myers. 2.5 years later, on July 21, 2001, the trial court set a hearing on the ineffective assistance of counsel claim before denying that claim in November of that same year. Thereafter, the Court of Criminal Appeals of Alabama affirmed the denial of relief to Rocky on February 21, 2003. As is that court's practice, it then sent notice of its decision to Rocky's attorney and not Rocky himself. This turned out to be a fateful decision. Here's Rocky's attorney, Casey Keaton.
Mr. Myers was procedurally defaulted from pursuing post-conviction appeals in the federal court system because he was completely abandoned by counsel. Earl Schwartz, an attorney from Tennessee, who was publicly reprimanded by the Tennessee Bar for his actions in Mr. Myers' case, is the sole reason that Mr. Myers has never been allowed to pursue his claims in federal court. No court has ever heard testimony or been presented with evidence that demonstrates Mr. Myers is not guilty of the crime for which he is sentenced to die.
So what's going on here? As Keaton notes, Rocky was represented by Earl Schwartz, who had been referred to Rocky's case by the Equal Justice Initiative. He had received notice of the denial of Rocky's appeal and had done nothing. He didn't appeal, he didn't tell Rocky, he didn't tell anyone. Schwartz wasn't willing to speak to us on the record, but he previously sent an email to a reporter for The Nation, in which he said that when he received the notice from the court, he had joined a new law firm and no longer had the four-person team working on Rocky's case. According to Schwartz, quote, "I should have returned the file to the Equal Justice Initiative at the time. I did not. That's on me." Schwartz is right. It was on him. Schwartz's new firm was in Memphis, Tennessee, and in 2005, the Tennessee Board of Professional Responsibility publicly censured Schwartz, finding that he had violated four separate provisions of the Tennessee Rules of Professional Responsibility. So what's the effect of this public censure? Well, nothing really. The public censure was published, and that's it. No disbarment, no suspension, no consequences. Last year, Schwartz would become the president of the Memphis Bar Association. Meanwhile, back in 2004, Rocky Myers got a letter.
I was ignorant. You know, I was real young and dumb and not really knowing, you know, what was not the significance of the weight of what was going on. It was like over my head, you know. And then I trusted that my lawyers was going to take care of all that, you know, and that I had nothing to worry about. You know, at one time, here on death row, I lost my lawyers. I didn't have any lawyers at all for years and years and years. And the attorney general wrote me a letter, said he's going to file for me an execution date. And I was like, what the hell? What's going on? And so when I dug into it, trying to find out what's going on, trying to find out, I didn't have a lawyer because I wasn't paying attention to my own life. I was busy listening to the radio and watching television, you know what I'm saying? And so it's messed up, man. It's a process, I guess.
The letter that Rocky is referencing was a letter from the Attorney General of Alabama, telling him his execution would soon be scheduled because he had no avenue of appeal left open. In other words, because of the passage of time since the opinion of the Court of Criminal Appeals, Rocky could no longer appeal to the Supreme Court of Alabama or bring in an appeal in federal court. Now, at this point, you might be wondering what's going on. How can Rocky be held responsible for failing to meet a deadline when the Court of Criminal Appeals only sent its opinion to his lawyer, who ended up abandoning him? And the answer is, that's the way the law works. And that's why Casey Keaton says that Rocky has never been able to present evidence of his innocence in court. Remember how the state's strongest witness against Rocky Myers was Marzell Ewing, who later came forward and said that he had made everything up, with Sergeant Boyd making the stolen car he was picked up in disappear?
What happened to you after you provided that information to Boyd?
Boyd told me that they had Butch in the next room, and that if I go back with him, then he'll take the car to on the side, back to Nashville or whatever, and tell him he found it on the side of the road.
How'd you come to be in possession of that stolen vehicle?
Well, me and Flatbroke went to Nashville and stole it.
Now, if you're a longtime listener, you probably know there's a pretty strong case that the state's failure to disclose this information was a Brady violation because it's exculpatory and undermines our confidence in the jury's verdict. It's a potentially compelling argument, but no court has ever considered the merits of the claim. Because Rocky Myers was abandoned by his counsel and missed his appellate deadline, he can't bring any new appeals. Of course, this might prompt another question. It's now been 15 years since Rocky got the letter about his execution being imminent because he was out of appeals. So how is he still with us 15 years later? Well, let's go back to that letter. When Rocky got it, he had to have another inmate read it to him. Why? Rocky can't really read, he's even worse at math, and his memory isn't much better.
Mr. Miller, I can't remember a lot of things, a lot of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my memory is really, really bad. You know, I don't know why. I told my sisters maybe because I don't read or nothing like that. I don't exercise. Said you exercise your brain to get stronger and all that stuff, but I don't do none of that stuff. You know, I'm not a reader. I can't read a lot. I can read, but I can't read that good. You know, and spelling is not good. Math is off the table.
Yeah.
As we'll discuss in more detail, there's a strong argument that Rocky Myers actually has mental retardation, which has now been replaced by the preferred term intellectual disability. The question of whether and when people with intellectual disability can be executed has vexed the Supreme Court for the past 30 years. It all started with the Supreme Court's 1989 opinion in a case out of Texas, Penry versus Lanau, in which attorneys for John Penry claimed that executing him would be cruel and unusual punishment.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. In the Fifth Circuit, the state of Texas conceded that Johnny Penry had limited mental capacity and that psychological testing supports the U.S. District Court's finding that he has the mind of a 6 to 7 year old child. In addition to this, the evidence in the record is that Johnny Penry was severely abused as a child, that he was in and out of state mentally retarded institutions, and that as a teenager, he was victimized by older males.
The Supreme Court rejected the claim that the Eighth Amendment provides a blanket ban on executing those with intellectual disability, and that opinion stood for 13 years, until right around the time that Rocky Myers was losing his appeals in Alabama. In 2002, the Supreme Court took up the case of Daryl Atkins, a Virginia man with intellectual disability who faced execution. Here's Justice Stevens announcing the opinion of the court in Atkins.
Those mentally retarded persons who meet the law's requirements for criminal responsibility should be tried and punished when they commit crimes. Because of their disabilities in areas of reasoning, judgment, and control of their impulses, however, they do not act with the level of moral culpability that characterizes the most serious adult criminal conduct. Moreover, their impairments can jeopardize the reliability and fairness of capital proceedings against mentally retarded defendants. Presumably for these reasons, in the 13 years since we decided the case of Penry against Lanau, the American public, legislators, scholars, and judges have deliberated over the question whether the death penalty should ever be imposed on a mentally retarded criminal. The consensus reflected in those deliberations informs our answer to the question presented by this case, whether such executions are, quote, cruel and unusual punishments, unquote, prohibited by the Eighth Amendment to the federal Constitution.
And according to Justice Stevens, that national consensus was that it was cruel and unusual punishment to execute those with intellectual disability. As Justice Stevens alluded to in announcing the court's opinion, the court agreed with this consensus for two reasons. Colin spoke about these reasons with Shira Wachschlag, the legal director of the ARC, the country's largest community-based organization working to advance the civil rights of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
The court actually held, to be, you know, completely exact, that anyone that has a diagnosis of intellectual disability cannot be executed because it would violate the Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. You know, like you said, they articulated that people with intellectual disability face a special risk of wrongful execution, largely because some of the risks that I articulated, just now about things like false confessions, greater risk of exploitation, and less ability to assist counsel in their case. And the court also noted that doing so, you know, executing people with intellectual disability would violate their inherent human dignity.
The wrongful conviction component of this analysis takes us back to the very start of the series and the use of judicial override in Rocky's case. As we noted then, Patrick Mulvaney, the managing attorney for capital litigation at the Southern Center for Human Rights, wrote an essay about the increased likelihood of wrongful conviction for people in Alabama who were given death sentences as the result of a judicial override. At the end of that essay, Mulvaney called for throwing out the death sentences of those defendants such as Rocky Myers, who were given death penalty after judicial override. And he did so by drawing an analogy to the Supreme Court's Atkins opinion.
People with intellectual disability face a special risk of wrongful execution for a variety of reasons, including that it's more difficult for them to work meaningfully with their counsel. They're susceptible to false confessions and so forth. And so what the court was saying is that if we have a category of individuals who face a special risk of wrongful execution, then we have to look at that category and decide if maybe the death penalty is not appropriate for that category. And the analogy to judicial override is fairly strong because this is a category of individuals who face a special risk of wrongful execution because their jurors came back with life sentences, not death sentences. They voted for life, and we know that one of the main reasons that the juries can vote for life is because they have lingering doubts about guilt.
I am one of those people who needs all the help she can get to go to sleep. My mind races all the time, and I just find every reason not to fall asleep. However, last couple of years, it's been harder to find those excuses because I have Boll & Branch sheets, and I never realized in all these years that sheets can make so much difference. With Boll & Branch, everything is designed with your comfort in mind. From their 100% organic cotton signature soft sheets, sheets that start out luxuriously soft and actually get softer over time, to the cozy throws and their plush towels. There's a reason Boll & Branch products have thousands of five-star reviews. That's because a great night's sleep is easier than ever if you have the world's softest sheets. Believe me, I am a witness to this. Their sheets are even loved by three U.S. presidents. With Boll & Branch, you can feel good about your good night's sleep because people are at the heart of everything they do. From the farmers who grow their organic cotton to the people who sleep on their sheets at night, like you, me, and my cats. They want you to love your purchase, so they offer a no-risk 30-day trial and free shipping. But I really doubt you're going to want to send them back. I fight over our sheets. We have got like three different sets of them. I fight over them with my kids. So once you sleep on their sheets, you're pretty much never going to want to sleep on anything else again. To get you started right now, our listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com if you use the promo code undisclosed. Once again, go to bollandbranch.com today for $50 off your first set of sheets. That's boll, B-O-L-L, and branch.com, promo code undisclosed. bollandbranch.com, promo code undisclosed.
So if Rocky Myers does have an intellectual disability, there are two strong reasons to believe that he's an innocent man. And as we'll discuss later, Rocky does indeed have such a diagnosis. But before we get to that, let's start with the basics. What exactly is an intellectual disability, and what did the court hold in Atkins?
Intellectual disability, a lot of people don't necessarily realize that intellectual disability is not kind of a broad category, but it's actually a formal diagnosis, just in the way that something like autism or Down syndrome is a formal diagnosis with a formal definition. So the court actually held, to be completely exact, that anyone that has a diagnosis of intellectual disability cannot be executed because it would violate the Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment.
While this seems relatively straightforward, it's been anything but in practice. And that's because of an important decision, or rather lack of decision, made by the Atkins court.
The Atkins case specifically left it to the states to develop appropriate ways to enforce the restriction, but they did say that it was important to consult, or necessary to consult, clinical standards such as, the American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities and the DSM definitions when coming to these conclusions.
Some states did a good job with this. Other states, not so much. The Florida courts rejected Freddie Lee Hall's claim that he couldn't be executed despite substantial evidence that he had an intellectual disability. And here's Justice Kennedy announcing the Supreme Court's opinion to reverse that decision in Hall v. Florida.
There was evidence of Hall's low IQ scores, including a test score of 71. But the Florida Supreme Court interprets a Florida statute implementing Atkins to define intellectual disability to require an IQ score of 70 or lower. And since Hall's relevant score was 71, 1 point above the Florida limit, it held Atkins to be inapplicable. As a result, the substantial evidence of Hall's developmental disabilities was deemed not relevant to the constitutional claim raised under Atkins. Because Hall's lowest test score was 71, 1 point above the Florida cutoff of 70, he was not allowed to present other evidence showing deficits in adaptive functioning as bearing upon his intellectual disability for the purpose of invoking the protection of Atkins. This court now holds that Florida's ruling setting 70 or below as an absolute cutoff point is unconstitutional.
And then there's Texas. Here's Shira Wachschlag describing their approach.
In Morby, Texas, there was a challenge to Texas's use of stereotypical and outdated factors called the Briseno factors that they were being used by the state of Texas to determine intellectual disability and death penalty cases. So one thing that's been noted frequently is, like, among these factors, which were not scientific, included, you know, basically a comparison to the character Lenny in Of Mice and Men, and that was one factor in how the state of Texas was determining intellectual disability in these cases.
Understandably, many took offense to the state of Texas using a fictional character created by John Steinbeck to determine who lives and who dies. One of those people was Steinbeck's own son. Here's Renee Feltz from an episode of Democracy Now!
And what the courts have done is ended up relying on stereotypes. One of the stereotypes they relied on was Lenny in John Steinbeck's novel, a fictional novel, of Mice and Men. People might remember him petting the bunny. He's very distinctly a developmentally challenged person. The courts used him and said, you know, if he is not similar, the defendants before us doesn't seem like this person, then we might use our own interpretation to say that he's not mentally retarded. We have a statement from him that I can read part of,
this
if you like.
This is the son of John Steinbeck.
That's right. He writes, quote, "Prior to reading about Mr. Wilson's case, I had no idea that the state of Texas would use a fictional character that my father created to make a point about human loyalty and dedication, i.e. Lenny Small from Of Mice and Men, as a benchmark to identify whether defendants with intellectual disability should live or die. My father was a highly gifted writer who won the Nobel Prize for his ability to create art about the depth of the human experience and condition. His work was certainly not meant to be scientific, and the character of Lenny was never intended to be used to diagnose a medical condition like intellectual disability."
The case that Feltz is referencing is the case of Bobby James Moore. Moore was scheduled to be executed because, in effect, the Texas courts had concluded he wasn't like Lenny from Of Mice and Men. But the Supreme Court stepped in 2016 and told Texas to reconsider its opinion. Here's Justice Ginsburg announcing the opinion of the court.
"Based on two of Moore's IQ scores, 74 and 78, the CCA concluded that Moore had not shown intellectual functioning deficits. Even if he had, the CCA continued, his adaptive strengths offset any adaptive weaknesses. Briseno's seven evidentiary factors, the CCA added, weighed against finding Moore intellectually disabled. We vacate the CCA's judgment because it disapproved the habeas court's employment of current medical guidance."
In other words, the Texas courts were supposed to determine whether Moore had intellectual disability by using current medical guidance. Instead, they compared him to a fictional character. So the Supreme Court gave Texas a do-over. And during that do-over, they again found that Moore did not have intellectual disability. The case went back up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that court again found that Texas had botched the analysis in an opinion issued in February of this year. According to the court,
"To be sure, the Court of Appeals opinion is not identical to the opinion we considered in Moore. There are sentences here and there suggesting other modes of analysis consistent with what we said. But there are also sentences here and there suggesting reliance upon what we earlier called lay stereotypes of the intellectually disabled."
So at this point, you might be wondering, what happened at the Atkins hearing to determine whether Rocky Myers had intellectual disability? Again, here's Shira Wachschlag.
So I think it's really important to emphasize realize in the Rocky Myers case that there was never an actual Atkins hearing to fully consider whether he had intellectual disability, because he never had that opportunity based on a variety of factors in his record, you know, having to do with, statute of limitations and his attorney not following up on the issues. So the only time that it ever was brought up in court was in the context of an equitable tolling hearing. And his attorneys were arguing, well, you know, there should be some extra consideration here because of his intellectual disability. But there was never, you know, there should be, when it comes to this issue, there should be a full hearing just to discuss the intellectual disability diagnosis. And he never had that opportunity to really present the full range in court.
Breaking that down, asking for equitable tolling is asking for tolling of or an extension to the statute of limitations. In other words, Rocky's attorneys acknowledged that Rocky missed his deadline to appeal and therefore technically could no longer appeal. But based on his appellate counsel abandoning him and Rocky arguably having intellectual disability, they asked for mercy from the court. No such mercy was given. To understand why, let's do what Texas didn't. Look at current medical guidance about what constitutes intellectual disability. Here's Dr. Kristen Treble, an associate professor of neuropsychology at the University of Alabama, Birmingham.
So the AAIDD and DSM-IV-TR agree that there are three criteria that must be met for a diagnosis of mental retardation. The first is that there must be current IQ scores of around 70 or as high as 75, indicating a limitation in intellectual functioning. Second, there must be limitations in adaptive behavior. So adaptive functioning refers to how well individuals cope with common life demands and how independent that they are for their age, considering age and sociocultural background and community setting. And then third, this intellectual disability must have began before the age of 18, which is during the developmental period.
Let's start with the third of those factors, evidence of intellectual disability manifesting before the age of 18. Rocky's friends and family definitely have a recollection of this. For example, here's his neighbor and childhood friend, Andrea Regina Jenkins.
Rocky did not go to school with us. So he would go to a school that they would call, oh, you have to ride the special ed bus, because it was a yellow bus. We didn't ride the yellow bus, so he felt kind of bad. And sometimes he would just leave and come back, because if you get teased a lot, it frustrates you, even as an adult.
But more than memories are needed in court proceedings. Luckily, after some searching, Rocky's team was able to locate his school records. Here's Sarah Romano, the investigator on Rocky's case.
As a clinical social worker, it was obvious to me of, you know, Rocky's cognitive difficulties and, you know, that he was ID. And when we were trying to get the documents, get the proof to, you know, show the courts that, you know, he shouldn't be executed because he's ID. And there's a Supreme Court case that relates to that, Atkins. And in our effort to try to prove that, I was in New Jersey a lot because that's where he grew up. I had been to the Orange County school system many times trying to get documents to show that he was in ID classes, special education, all of that stuff, and ended up just happen upon two women in the special education department who offered to help me try to find records because they had a warehouse. So they went on their time off. It was a Saturday. They met me at this warehouse. We opened up the building. There was literally filing cabinets just thrown all over the place, on top of each other, whatever, drawers falling out of some of them. One of those women ended up finding Rocky's records. And it was
just by chance?
Yes, and it was such an emotional, like, high for us, because they both started crying. At the time, the attorney I was working with, well, it wasn't Casey Keaton, it was another attorney at the time. I mean, and we were ecstatic because it's like, oh, here we have it, right? Like, I just figured it was like a done deal.
So what did those records show? Again, here's Shira Wachschlag.
In elementary school, he was placed in special education, And in middle school, he was actually placed in a separate school only for students with intellectual disability. He had challenges with things like attention, concentration, and memory.
From these records and other information we'll discuss later, Dr. Treba was able to conclude that Rocky Myers had intellectual disability or mental retardation prior to the age of 18.
My conclusion from all my review of the information is that Mr. Myers had mental retardation prior to age 18, and he continues to have mental retardation.
In reaching this conclusion, Dr. Treble partially relied upon IQ tests given to Rocky Myers at the ages of 11, 12, and 16, which led to scores of 75, 64, and 71. In 2013, Dr. Treble administered her own IQ test to Rocky Myers, and he scored a 73 on it. According to Dr. Treble, all four of those scores fall in the acceptable range for a finding of mild mental retardation or intellectual disability.
So his current WAIS-IV full-scale IQ score fell within the 70 to 75 range that the DSM-IV and the AAIDD state are appropriate ranges for diagnosing mild mental retardation.
About a week ago, my oldest daughter ran out of shampoo and asked if she could grab some from my shower stall. And I said, okay, that's fine. There's a couple different bottles in there. Grab what you want. I didn't know she had grabbed my Function of Beauty shampoos until about a day or so later. I was like in the shower and I'm like, where's my Function of Beauty shampoos? Because they are my favorite shampoo and conditioner set. I've got a bunch of other shampoo and conditioners that ever since I got my Function of Beauty products, I haven't been using. And I was really hoping she'd grab one of those. But my daughter loved it, and she was intrigued by the fact that it was personalized. The bottles have my name on them. That means they belong to me, which is how I was able to get them back. But look, if you're anything like me, over the years, you have got bottles and bottles piling up in your bathroom because every single one will promise something else. It'll say, okay, you're going to get shiny hair, or you're going to get softer hair, you're going to get moisturized hair, you're going to get fuller hair, you want to bouncier hair. But here's the thing. What if you want all of it? What if you don't have just one hair goal and you have lots of hair goals? Well, that's where Function of Beauty steps in. They individually formulate every single bottle based on your hair type, your hair goals. You can pick up 5 hair goals and your preferences. You can pick out your color, you can pick out the fragrance of your product, or you can say, hey, I don't want any dyes, I don't want any fragrances. I am that person. I like the pretty colors and I want to smell like everything good that I can. The products are so personalized, like I said before, that your name is even printed on the bottle. Guess what? I'm going to be getting both of my daughters some of their own bottles because they loved it so much. They never even realized that I had these. What I also love about Function of Beauty is they never use sulfates, parabens, mineral oils, or any other harmful ingredients. You can feel good about using Function of Beauty. Because the sad reality is most major drugstore brands do test on animals, but Function of Beauty is 100% vegan and cruelty-free. And they've got over 18,000 five-star reviews and counting. So get your own Function of Beauty shampoo and conditioner customized just for you, or customized for somebody you love, or customized for somebody who loves hair. Because our listeners will get 20% off their first order. To redeem it, just head to functionofbeauty.com/undisclosed and take the hair profile quiz. Go to functionofbeauty.com/undisclosed to get 20% off your custom formula.
This takes us to the first of the four factors for a diagnosis of intellectual disability, which is a limitation in intellectual functioning at the time of the crime, which often coincides with an IQ of up to 70 or 75. Under Dr. Treble's testing, which was done after Rocky's equitable tolling hearing, Rocky would have satisfied this factor. But in preparation for this hearing, the state had Dr. Glenn King perform his own IQ test on Rocky in prison, and that testing produced a different result, one that Dr. Treble questions.
The only exception to this was Dr. Glenn King's results in 2006, which revealed a WAIS-III full-scale IQ score of 84. This score is an outlier because it's outside the expected range even of error. I would give less weight to that score. There's a variety of issues that can come into play in terms of, you know, how the tests are administered, how items are queried.
The problems that I found with Dr. King's assessment, first off, he relied on Robin's self-report of his own adaptive skills, which is not something that's clinically accepted. The proper way to assess adaptive behavior is to interview third parties, family or friends or teachers. Another issue was he did not measure adaptive skills in a typical community environment. There's no way in a prison that you were actually functioning on your own. The three areas that he did the best on in Dr. King's evaluation, so the subtests of picture completion, picture arrangement, and comprehension, those tests were removed from the WAIS-IV, and they tried to get rid of some of the tasks that were redundant and tasks that would have more of a practice effect. Another issue, Dr. King's higher score, the WAIS-III, when they gave it, it was right before the WAIS-IV came out. And so, really that test needed to be renormed. Individuals do get smarter over time, and tests need to be renormed so that they accurately reflect a person's performance in relation to other people.
And so at the equitable tolling hearing, the court did a few things. First, it found that three of Rocky's IQ scores were above 70, and that a score above 70 pretty much precludes a finding of intellectual disability. However, this appears medically wrong because the consensus is that a score between 70 and 75 is thought to be consistent with intellectual disability. And this is also legally wrong because this is the exact analysis the Supreme Court rejected in Hull v. Florida. Second, the court looked at Rocky's score of 84 on his most recent IQ test and figured that his lower scores as a teenager were likely the result of him not taking the test seriously and not the result of intellectual disability. Therefore, the court rejected his claim that Rocky had intellectual disability and refused to consider evidence that Rocky had limitations in adaptive behavior, which is the third element of an intellectual disability diagnosis. Let's dig into that last element a bit more. Shira Wachschlag observed some of the same issues that Dr. Treble did with regards to Dr. King's testing of Rocky.
Some of those flaws were things like relying only on Rocky Myers to self-report about his disability rather than also interviewing friends and family and assessing the full record, which is something that she did, as well as relying on an assessment of him only in the prison setting, which, you know, experts say that's not a typical environment, and because you can't really see what somebody's adaptive behavior skills are in a controlled environment like that, because it's not comparable to life on the outside. So it's not considered reliable to kind of think about assessments in that context only.
This then takes us back to what Dr. Treble did. In order to meet the third factor of the test for intellectual disability, a person needs to demonstrate at least two limitations in adaptive behavior. Based upon her testing of Rocky Myers, reviewing the statements of friends and family members who interacted with Rocky outside of prison, and talking to some of those same individuals, Dr. Treble is able to find five limitations. The first of those limitations was a limitation in functional academic skills.
So I guess to begin with, let's start with functional academic skills. And these things include things such as basic literacy, time or temporal relationships, and quantitative concepts or abilities. And this is an area that Robin Myers is severely impaired. So his school records consistently demonstrate very low skills in all core academic areas, including reading, spelling, and arithmetic. Mr. Myers was essentially illiterate. He learned how to sight read, but could not read more than single syllable words. He never learned to read phonetically. Therefore, he could only read the words that he had memorized that he had to practice over and over and over again, just kind of basic survival words, but he could not read a letter or read a newspaper or read complex legal documents. His reading, math, and spelling skills were about at the third grade level when he was 16 years old, and when he left school, they were about at the fourth grade level for reading.
This is consistent with what Rocky's lifelong friend James Anderson reports observing when the two of them were teenagers.
One day when I was over at their house, there was a paper on the coffee table that had like a picture and maybe the first letter of the word, and you fill in the rest of the blanks. And I thought it was Derek's, his youngest brother, because Derek was, I don't know, 7, 8 at the time. But when I saw one, I don't remember the word, when I saw one of the words misspelled, I said to Derek that he misspelled it, and he told me that wasn't his, it was Rocky's. And that was the first time I knew that he didn't read well anyway.
And as Dr. Treble notes, this limitation continued into adulthood.
His wife, or ex-wife, testified that he was unable to fill out job applications, that she would have to do this for him, even very simple job applications that just had information like name and address and type of work that he did in the past. He was unable to read job ads, or write letters, or read the newspaper or the Bible. He was completely dependent on his family and his friends to do all of this for him.
According to Dr. Treble, a second area of limitation for Rocky Myers is in the area of self-direction.
So this category refers to behaviors that are directed or guided by oneself. This refers to the ability of an individual to take initiative, to exercise self-discipline, and the ability to engage in goal-directed behaviors and task completion. It requires planning abilities. There were numerous examples of Mr. Myers' impairment in this area. He was unable to complete tasks independently. His mother noted on the ABAS that he was unable to keep working on tasks even when he became discouraged. That was noted numerous times in the academic records that, you know, he would get discouraged and would give up. He wasn't able to persist with the task and see it through its completion. There were other notes from family and friends that people had to sit there and observe him and supervise him doing a task to make sure that it got completed correctly or got finished. He was unable to arrive places on time or to plan ahead to get places on time or to complete big projects on time or to make plans in order to complete home projects in logical order. Again, this is another area that was noted by Lorraine Woodson on the ABAS too. His wife testified that she had to get to wake him up every day and make sure that he got up and got ready to work on time and make sure that he got there. He didn't have that ability, that self-directed skills to be able to manage himself and get himself to work independently on his own.
A third limitation is in the area of self-care. Dr. Treble was able to make this conclusion based upon statements by friends and family.
You know, and he didn't keep himself clean. You know, he used to wet the bed and get up and put his clothes on and go to school.
His hygiene was not the best. He smelled like urine. As far as him dressing himself, he dressed himself in some of the same dirty clothes he may have had on the day before.
According to Dr. Treble, this is classic evidence of a deficit in self-care.
A third area that I believe was impaired in terms of adaptive skills is self-care, or the ability to perform activities of daily living. And this is an area that's noted both by the DSM-4 and by the AAIDD. So there were, you know, evidence of deficits in personal hygiene and self-care. There are many, numerous antidotes of bedwetting, even as a teenager. These included interview information obtained from Andrea Jenkins, who was a neighbor and friend of the family, as well as James Anderson, again, neighbor and friend of Mr. Myers, as well as Jeffrey Myers, who was Rocky's brother, and his sister, Karen James, and his uncle, Moses Smith, and his ex-wife. All of those people noted the bedwetting and the problems with personal hygiene. Robin's ex-wife reported in her declaration that she was aware that her husband had a problem with bedwetting at least until the age of 19 when they were married. James Anderson noted that between the ages of 15 and 17, that Rocky had a urine smell on him. He'd wet the bed, and he would get up, and he wouldn't wash his body. It was hard to go around girls with Rocky because he smelled like urine. His brother noted that he would wet the bed, and he didn't keep himself clean. He'd wet the bed, and he'd get up, and he'd put on his clothes and go to school that way. His brother also noted, and his sister as well, that he didn't brush his teeth regularly, and that as a result, he suffered from dental problems later on. He didn't think to put on clean clothes or to take baths regularly. That was something that some other people had to remind him to do, or he just would not, he would fail to do it.
A fourth limitation found by Dr. Treball was in the area of home living, something that really couldn't be measured when Rocky was in the controlled prison environment.
So while Robin was able to do very simple household tasks like putting dirty clothes in the hamper or throwing away trash, there were a lot of household tasks and chores that he was unable or inconsistently did on his own. His friend, James Anderson, noted in his testimony that Robin was able to cook simple meals, such as like heat up a hot dog or a microwave dinner. However, he wasn't able to do anything more complicated because he couldn't read a recipe. Even his wife noted that he couldn't do something that required simple measurements, such as making mashed potatoes, because he put too much water and he didn't know how to use a measuring cup to measure the right amount of water, and his mashed potatoes came out too soupy.
A fifth and final limitation found by Dr. Treball was in the area of social and interpersonal skills. This conclusion came from statements like this one by Rocky's brother, Jeffrey.
When I was growing up, I had a lot of friends, you know, and he didn't hang around with us or anything like that. Rocky was more like, we had a dog named Duke. He would be with the dog and stuff like that. He didn't have friends.
And here, Dr. Treball explains this area of limitation in more detail.
Social skills, fifth area of impairment. And this involves the interpersonal skills and social responsibility, self-esteem, gullibility, social problem solving. And he was very susceptible to being fooled or tricked, manipulated or lied to.
All of the above led Dr. Treball to write a report in which she concluded, quote, "It is my opinion that Mr. Myers had an intellectual disability prior to age 18, and he continues to have an intellectual disability." The ARC has also written a letter on Rocky Myers' behalf, based in large part on Dr. Treball's report.
And we considered an evaluation from 2015 that was an expert neuropsychological evaluation, and this was something that was never actually able to be presented in court. It was done after, because of basically procedural limitations and timing. This was never something that was able to be presented in court, but it was put together essentially to argue for clemency.
Both Dr. Treball's report and the ARC letter are compelling evidence of Rocky Myers' intellectual disability, and there's strong reason to believe that the analysis done on this issue by the Alabama courts wouldn't withstand constitutional scrutiny if done in an Atkins hearing. But as noted, Rocky Myers never had an Atkins hearing. And as noted, neither Dr. Treball's report nor the ARC letter have ever been considered as part of any court proceeding. Instead, they were both submitted as part of an attempt to have the governor of Alabama grant Rocky clemency. And at least as of now, that's the only real shot that Rocky has of being taken off of death row. And what's very clear from Rocky's family is that even just Rocky being taken off of death row would be a huge thing. Here's his son, Dion.
My name is Dion Myers. I'm the son of Rocky Myers. I have four kids, his grandbabies, and he hasn't seen any of them. I got a wife. We've been married for 4 years, been together 9. You know, I really would like to get to see my dad and get to know him. You know, I can't do that if you take him away from me. So I'm asking if you can, just
show a little mercy.
And here's his son, Robin.
I know the allegations that he's facing. I know the charges that he's facing. But I still believe deep down in my heart that my father is a good man. And, you know, he loves his family. He do. He hates not being in our life. He hates the fact that where he's at is we can't really come see him all the time and we can't really talk to him all the time. And, you know, he didn't have the chances that I have in life. You know, he didn't have time to be with his children. I get to see my mama every day. I get to go hug her and tell her I love her. And he really never had that chance to even say goodbye to her when she passed away. You know, that's hard on a man. I'm asking you for clemency for Robin Myers. I'm asking you to just, you know, extend his life for me. I can talk to him on the phone. He can tell me things that I need to know in life. And, you know, he just keeps me looking and thinking straight. You know, you might not believe it, but he does. He tells me, you know, all the time that you gotta be a man for your family. And if it wasn't for my father, you know, a lot of people don't have a father to even talk to. Their fathers are, you know, gone on with God. But I have a father that I can talk to. I have a father that is somewhere in my life. And right now I'm just asking you just to save his life.
Finally, here's his daughter, Karen.
Mr. Robin Myers was convicted on capital murder charges in Morgan County, Alabama in 1994 for a crime that occurred in 1991. The jury recommended 9-3 that Mr. Myers be sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
And then there's Rocky himself. What would it mean for you now if the governor of Alabama were to decide she has questions about your guilt and takes you off of death row? What would that mean for you?
Oh, Lord. I pray every night for relief in my case, you know, and to get off of death row. To me, as a convict, an inmate, is another step toward me being with my family, you know, and to get off death row and not to have the threat of just being executed is really, really good, because I don't want to die. I do not want to be executed, especially for something I did not do. And so I don't want to be executed, and I want to spend time with my kids. You know, I want to be able to talk to my kids and see my kids, my grandkids, and, you know, and say happy birthday to them and congratulate them for doing good in school and all that type of stuff. It would mean the world to me to get off death row. It really would. It would mean the world to me. And to be honest with you, you know, even though, and this is probably going to sound crazy, because I think it is, but to get off death row is just what some of us want. You know, at least I'm not going to die. And if I got to spend the rest of my life in prison for something I didn't do, at least they ain't going to kill me.
As we've noted before, it's unclear when Rocky will be executed. He could get notice tomorrow that his execution will take place in 30 days. On the other hand, it might be another year or two before the state decides to take his life. When the state does give that notice, we'll place a call for all of our listeners to blow up the phone and email of the governor of Alabama and ask for clemency. As for now, the ACLU has a website where you can sign a petition asking for clemency for Rocky. It's at action.aclu.org/petition/save-Rocky-Myers. In the meantime, we're going to be working on a way to get Rocky back into court, as well as on legislation that would take everyone given the death sentence in Alabama based on judicial override off of death row.
This ends our series on Rocky Myers, but starting next week, we'll be back with new episodes dealing with the fifth trial of Keith Davis Jr. Thank you. big thank you to everybody who makes Undisclosed possible. Thank you to our sponsors who help us put on our episodes week after week. Thank you to Meetal Delahan, our executive producer, for helping keep this ship afloat. Thank you to Rebecca Lavoie, our fantastic audio producer, and also the co-host and producer of a couple of my favorite podcasts, including Crime Writers On. Do not miss her podcast. Thank you to Baluki for our logo, to Christy for maintaining our website. Also, a big thank you to our listeners. Thanks for coming back week after week. Check us out and make sure to follow us online on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is at UndisclosedPod. And please do not forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and rate us. Thanks so much. See you in a week.